501c3s, the government has a very big scope in how these agencies.
Hello and welcome to Panther Mountain Sound.
We are
Sam,
Katie,
and Michaela from Castleton, and you are listening to
WGXC Acra
on 90.7 FM. Keep on smiling.
There are so many things to do in the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, including on Saturday, August 19th, from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., it's time for the Deep in the Valley 2023 Festival. Raven Sings the Blues presents a second year of Psych Jam experimental country and folk bands performing, this year with Riley Walker, $75 Bill, Garcia Peoples, Sun Watchers, the Weeping Bong Band, Gold Dust, Ned Collette, and Gliders performing. That's at the From the Ground Brewery in Red Hook on Saturday, August 19th, the Deep in the Valley Festival. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org.
Wayfarm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wayfarm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of One Universal Media of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Hello and welcome to Panther Mountain Sound. Today we will be listening to a recent interview I did with Kristen Jacobs, who is Wolf Clan Lenape. She lives in the Delaware Nation in Ontario, Canada. And Justin Wexler from Wild Hudson Valley nearby. And we will be speaking about an Indigenous sound walk that's been installed here at Wave Farm. And you can come and walk this walk and hear this talk. All that's done via QR code to be able to listen to some Lenape context for these different stations on the sound walk. So yeah, we'll be featuring that. And I hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening. Yeah, I thought maybe we could just start with you introducing yourselves.
Nongjiai Yontele. So originally I'm from here, Shuk Noiki Lichtown Untele, which is in Richtown. Nongjiai Alnapawi Lakawit. I'm from Delaware Nation, which is in Ontario, Canada. Our people originally came from here, and that's why I'm here to learn from Justin about the area, the land. I know, like, he's very knowledgeable, and I've learned so much just being here just in the last couple of days.
That's funny because I feel like I feel the same. Learned from you because, like, yeah, I've, you know, done archival work, and I've worked with some elders from different Delaware communities over the years to learn about, you know, plant medicines and, you know, like, how people today hunt and fish and stuff, but I'm very rooted in, like, eyewitness accounts from centuries ago and missionaries lists, so, like, it's so nice to be with a speaker of the language and, like, you know, I'm learning to see these words in whole new ways right now.
Right, and he's been saying words that he knows, and I've been saying words that I know, and we can both understand each other, and also kind of, if we're not sure what the, like, word is, then we can just, we're able to figure out what it is, basically. I don't know how to explain that. What's the best way to explain, like words for some of the plants, and he may know the word, I don't, but when he tells me, I can pick up from those sounds, like, what it probably means, literally.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of fun to do.
That's
or
incredible.
Looking at the map and seeing the
place
names.
Oh, that was so fun, looking at Catskill Mountain place names that are from Lenape, and, like, yeah, like, you instantly took apart, which is Shindaken today, but saw Shindaklin, which is, like,
Shindaklin.
Definitely the original meaning for into the hemlocks or cedars there.
It's like where the cedars are.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow, because they say it means where the waters flow.
Oh yeah, how could it? There's no way, right?
Is that's what they say. Shindaklin means.
Yeah.
No, that's not even close.
There's so much fake, like, bad name translation.
So we're setting the record straight here.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing. It sounds like you're able to breathe new life into some things.
Right.
You know,
some words.
The juxtaposition of mountains and waters is characteristic of the Lenape homeland of the Hudson Valley. For centuries, local Lenape people visited their fishing camps on local tributary streams to catch springtime runs of spawning chamo or shad and muskanamak or striped bass. Today, their descendants continue to fish for springtime spawning wasing or walleye in their exiled communities in Ontario.
I'm Justin Wexler. I run Wild Hudson Valley, which is a local environmental education and history, like, business, I guess. I'm from the area, from Columbia and Greene counties. I lived here most of my life. And, yeah, when I was a teenager, I started doing the work I'm doing today, which is try to understand what the landscape looked like here before the settlers came, what was life like for the native people from here, where are they today, like, what is life like now, like, and exploring, you know, the traditions that and the ways in which native people here connect to the land through stories, language, and as well as throughout the Hudson Valley. And as often as we can, we work to encourage or facilitate Lenape people visiting their ancestral land here in the Hudson Valley and, you know, representing themselves, because it's been over two centuries since the people from here were forced away. So we, you know, it's good to get people back in their land to talk about themselves and to connect with it, I guess.
So tell us a little bit about what you were doing here today.
The Wave Farm, I had a tour this morning, and there's a lot of native plants and trees that are specific in their location of, like, how they're growing, and Justin's able to tell us about those plants, and I'm able to help with the language aspect, and so they'll have a recording of what plant specifically, like, you're to look at along the trail, and they'll be able to play a QR code and hear me speak about what that plant is and how we might have said some of those words in our language.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then really, like, trying through the language, trying to connect people taking this sound walk on the trails here, connect them to the land in a new way. So also going, yeah, like Kristen was saying, like, going into, like, some cultural specifics, like, whether something was used for a medicine or, like, how the name and the Munsee language describes the bird's call.
Ahas is a good one. Mm-hmm. Ahas is our word for crow because it sounds like aha.
Mm. Yeah. I love that.
Yes, and they're actually able to hear it from a Muncie speaker. A lot of people still look at Native people in general as people who lived thousands or hundreds of years ago, that they don't still live today like everyone else. Mm. We're still speaking our language and trying to take back our culture, and doing things like this just brings like more awareness to the people in this area and, you know, how important the plant life is and taking care of it too.
You know what I just realized? The last record of someone speaking your language where we are right now, because there was a major trail here that crossed the Catskill Mountains, last record 1790.
Oh, wow.
So it's been like 230 years at least, over 230 years likely since it was last spoken here.
Wow. So long ago.
Yeah, that's kind of nuts. Yeah, it was a local hunting guide who remained in the area, and I don't know whether he ended up in Ontario or Wisconsin, but he stayed here longer than other people, so he would have spoken the Muncie language. And that's the last record that I know of.
The shagbark hickory tree, or Teshkwatminji, was once one of the most highly valued trees for Lenape people. The strong, flexible wood provides hunting bows, poles for house frames, and excellent firewood, and the delicious nuts were harvested in great quantities for meal, milk, and oil. In some Lenape dialects, the word for nut is pecan, which was borrowed into English as pecan.
So, yeah, it's been a long time, but now you're here and it's back.
It's back.
And hopefully more speakers will come. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the fact that you guys are able to collaborate, bring these two, you know, worlds together, mm-hmm. of Justin's lens of research and your living knowledge. Did you grow up learning the language?
Actually, I grew up, we had language in our daycare and kindergarten. So the kids in my community, we were there for daycare, kindergarten, and then once we're in grade one, we go off the reserve to a public school that our community put money into, and it's called Nahi Ridge Elementary, and Nahi means downstream, and it's referred to as downstream because our sister community, Muncie, Delaware, is referred to as Nalahi, which means upstream. So it was just in reference to each other. And so Nahi became part of our school name. And they have the opportunity. They haven't always had the opportunity. I had to take French while I was in public school many years ago. But I believe the language has been, Delaware has been in our school since 2006 or 2007. Somewhere around there, so about just over 15 years.
Yeah.
And I started teaching there in 2015. So I started relearning my language, I think I was around 30. So there was a huge gap, and the only things I could remember from kindergarten were animals and colors and counting.
Mm.
A couple of little songs, yeah. But that's usually what we learn. And so around the time when I was working at our language department, I started working in our daycare, and I had gotten teaching credentials, like to teach primary junior grades. We had the idea that if our community ever had its own school, that we should make sure that we're certified teachers, you know, for the paperwork and stuff, yeah. like that. So when our teacher Glenn Jacobs passed on, then I was asked if I would go in and teach, and so I had to go through that process and became the teacher. But before that, our reserve had started an immersion program with Diane Snake, and Diane Snake is our last first speaker. Like, I don't think she started speaking English until she was 8, maybe. So we got her to come in and sit with us for 3 days a week, and we did that. They actually started that program a year before I joined. I was on maternity leave, and when I came back, they said, well, you're going to be at the language department 3 days and in the kindergarten the other two teaching. So I said, okay. And I knew of Diane. I knew of her. Yeah, she just had this really, really great way of teaching. I was talking to Justin about it on the way here. And so we spent 3 days a week with her for, I think, 2 years. And then we realized that we need more time. We need more time, like full time. So all of us took leaves from our jobs and went Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, like 8:30, 4:30, something like that. And documented, you know, we translated songs, children's stories, everything. And then when our Delaware teacher passed on, then I had to go into the school. And so I kind of got less and less, but still, like, kept in contact with Diane. We text in Delaware as best as I can, and she'll correct me or say, you could have said it like this, or... But yeah, and now I feel like learning the language, I need to know how did we get to Ontario? That's kind of like my next area of interest, because I feel like our students want to know. Mm. They're going to have the same questions I had growing up that I didn't have the answers to, like I do today.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to share all that with them, bring them here someday.
Well... we could help make that happen.
Yeah.
Can I add something for listeners?
Yes,
so
totally.
For people who don't know, so Delaware, that's coming from the Delaware River. I'm not going to go into the history of the name, but the native peoples in the Hudson and Delaware Valleys for centuries, when this was a British colony, they were either known as the River Indians or the Delaware River Indians, and that became Delaware Indians. And that's because there was a continuum of dialects of the Delaware or Lenape language spoken in both the Hudson River and Delaware River valleys. Kristen had mentioned, like, Diane Snake as, you know, the last first language speaker, but a lot of our place names around here come from their language. So names like Wawarsing, Shandaken, Koksaki, Esopus, as well as words farther away like Manhattan, are all coming from the Munsee language, which is one of the Delaware languages. This is a very, very special language for the Hudson and Delaware, upper Delaware valleys.
And it's extremely endangered right now, having only Diane as our first speaker. When we started the immersion program, she had 21 students. And a year later when I joined, I believe there was 6. But our reserve was really supportive in, funding the program. And they sent us to Lakehead University for 4 summers to learn how to be second language teachers. So I feel like they've really, really invested in us. And so I try to do everything I can with our language.
Right.
And sharing and... just making it fun to learn. And
this northern red oak is one of many oak tree species found in Lenape country. The sustainable land management practices of the Lenape people, which included prescribed burning, encouraged the growth of different species of Wanakwaminji, or oak trees, which supported a vast diversity of pollinators with their leaves and game animals with their acorns. Such animals included the eastern elk, or moose, a majestic species whose bugling calls once echoed among the Catskill Mountains in the autumn. This word gave the English language the word moose.
I mean, the methods you're using, I've never seen anything like it for language learning, and it's just so innovative and, like, engaging.
Mm-hmm. And was this a methodology that Diane introduced you to, or something you came up with along the way, or...
Well, I've kind of had to look and experiment, I should say, with my students. And like I was telling Justin about the younger ones, I do, it's a lot of just verbal and images. And like I try to stay away from the standard pencil and paper when they're that small, because at the same time they're learning English. And English is so completely different than Delaware that I don't want to confuse them. I want to teach them about the writing part when they're older and can understand the difference between the two. And I don't think our public school is the place for that to happen. They need to hear it all day, every day, if we want to bring it back as a speakable language. And that's one of my goals, is to see that happen, try to help create that learning space for them. I say that being a teacher from a public school.
Yeah.
But in reality, I think outdoor education for our kids is where it's at, for sure.
Future.
It's doable. Yeah. There's a lot of learning environments like that in other communities in our area. Like maybe Anna was telling me about the Akwesasne Freedom School. That would be a nice place to visit and model. In our area, the Oneidas have the 13 Moons camp.
Yeah.
That is, I took my kids there on a field trip, and you know, we got to see them skin a squirrel and you know, make maple syrup and sit in a lodge and hear teachings and just be outside and away from the pavement and walls.
Mm-hmm. And one thing you see at Akwesasne is a lot of restoration of ceremonies and ceremonial songs. Are you seeing that as well?
Beginning to, yes. Yeah. A lot of those songs are held on to by the Haudenosaunee people. And it's our job to go and relearn them back. And we're lucky that we do have people from the nearby Oneida community that still sing those songs and share those songs with us anytime we ask or invite them to our community.
I think it's incredible.
Oh, God. Inishik.
And
they know who they are.
And we also have, you're doing a workshop tomorrow, a wampum workshop?
Yes.
So I would love to talk about the cultural significance of wampum for our listeners, just to give a more of an understanding of how important that is.
So wampum was used in many different ways. Most people would likely most know it as the first money when the Europeans came over, and also in the wampum belts that you see. But wampum was also used as a way of communicating between the communities. Like if we didn't speak the same languages, the color of the wampum belt, the darker colors usually signified like either war or battle, like something like along those lines, and the white more of like peace symbols. So like those, they can be interpreted that way. We have a few belts that are specific to Delaware people that I've been learning about from Justin. I thought I knew some things, and then I heard some things that Justin has shared with me. And one thing I can say is when I was research our belts, I could never find like exact records of them. And like, and just reading through material that Justin shared, it's because they, I don't know if we don't completely know where they originated from. We know they were by our people, but they weren't used like other belts where like their whatever the agreement or treaty was is written down in history. These were just kind of appeared kind of, and but we're able to break down what they mean based on like colors and symbols and things like that.
Right.
So what we're gonna do is we've got some wampum, some imitation wampum, clay wampum, I think you guys.
Yeah, because the real shell wampum is hard to come by, and it's very expensive.
Yeah, but
for good reason.
This clay wampum looks really cool because it has the white. You know, the shell colorness as opposed to just a solid purple.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the land and the importance of taking care of it and putting together some sort of design that we're going to make a belt of with the people that are there, and just, you know, discussing like, you know, how important it is to keep it the way it is and don't change any more than what's already been done. And being, I guess, land stewards for the area. Mm. And I think that'll be really cool to put a belt together
That's
that.
Incredible. Fun.
Yeah.
Guys, sorry.
It's just something that a lot of people overlook or don't think about is how art synthesized all what we would call disciplines. You know, a piece of art had your love for the land, had your relationship to the land, it had your traditional ecological knowledge of the land, it had all these things in within it, which a lot of times people don't realize is possible. We always separate things, and over here I'm doing science, over here I'm doing art, but no, this is everything all at once. And so this is a great way for people to interact with that reality.
I just had a thought for that belt. You know, like the Catskill Mountain.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Hudson River.
Oh, my gosh.
If
that's great.
See what those lines look like.
Yeah. That sounds beautiful. Can I add just one quick thing?
Yeah, sure.
So, like, for people who've never heard of wampum before, traditionally, the white beads, as you mentioned, are made from the, like, central column of a whelk, so like a conch shell, and the purple, or sometimes called black beads, are coming from hard shell or quahog clams, which is why, you know, they're coming from the ocean. So these are ocean shells, which gives them, like, makes them really, I think, was one reason why they're traditionally very significant for Northeastern Native people. And I've been told by people that, like, holding just the presence of a string or a belt of wampum helps ensure that, like, what you're saying is true, and it brings, like, positivity. And one Delaware person I know from the tribe in eastern Oklahoma even told me that he was told by old people that sometimes a speaker at an important, you know, at a ceremony or council might hold a wampum bead in their mouth while talking to make sure that what they were saying was coming, was true and coming from their heart.
I've heard that right? About the truth part,
yep.
About having it in your mouth when you're speaking, and also the string wampum that people would use, like carry small strings with wampum beads that help them tell the story whatever the story was that they had to share. It just helps you. Holding that when you're speaking is going to help you retain and tell that story or share that teaching.
So it's like the symbols in it as like, well, you know, the story is there, the message is there, and it's helping you remember it, but it also preserves it for posterity. So it's like...
And those strings were always the white beads.
So cool.
It's so beautiful. And traditionally, the string was milkweed fiber, or...
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
You know what else? I heard one document from 300 years ago. They said that the best belts are strung on turkey sinew, specifically.
Oh, wow.
That's got to be a lot of turkeys for a belt.
Right.
So, you can imagine them all roaming, though. There's probably quite a bit of turkeys.
Oh, definitely. There are a lot of turkeys. That actually, the local clan that was the most important here, from what I can tell in land deeds, is Turkey Clan around here. So,
because this, it seems like the way the spaces were created was really great for turkeys. It's like the way that, you know, they talk about that, or they, it looked like a park, like, you know, this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's like, it's always good for.
Well, right here, like the foot of the Catskill Escarpment, you can see there's scattered pitch pines in the woods. So this would have looked like a park because it was burned so often for hunting. It was like savanna. So you think of the Catskill Mountain slopes as densely wooded today, but actually the tree species are showing that because of native people burning to improve their hunting grounds, it was actually fairly open. So there definitely would have been lots and lots of turkeys wandering around.
Station 9. The Lenape language is extremely descriptive, and names for birds are a good example of this. Spend some time under this dense white pine and listen for the songs of local birds. You might hear muskchililish, or black-capped chickadee, a titis, or blue jay, or even a kokos, or barred owl. All of these names describe these bird species' calls.
I was going to say, no linum in Katahamtum. I like your shirt. The water is like, that's a big saying at home too. We use that a lot.
How would you say that?
So in our language, water is bi, and life is bamausawakan. Kamilkona bi winjwalausiang. So we're given water for a good life. So Kamil Kona means like we, all of us are given. Kamil Kona, be water, Winj for, and then Walausiang for our good, to have a good life.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Like a built-in gratitude, the gift. And so you guys are, it's a kind of probably a nonstop place name slash plant name dynamic going on.
It's just such a cool language because the way you put together words and sentences, mm-hmm. like it's just endlessly interesting. It's so different than English. Like, I was, like, I don't know, I had remembered from seeing in some old word list from centuries ago a word for saying the sky is, like, it's a clear day. So it's mushakwat. And Kristen hadn't heard that expression before, but instantly understood it.
Right, because we say mosh as like in not like something being empty. And then the awkward talks about like the weather. But yeah, you can put that together. Mosh awkward, like mosh awkward, like the empty sky, clear sky.
Yeah, clear sky.
I never heard that before. What?
Yeah, I don't even know where I've seen it.
But it makes sense, right? Uh-huh. The mochakwit.
There's a lot out there. People don't realize. Yeah. So much was recorded, a lot by ethnologists and linguists and missionaries, but also some stuff by Lenape people, by Mohican people, once that people started writing about themselves in the late 18th century. And much of it's not published, but it's out there. It just takes years to find it.
So by out there, you mean in some archive?
Yep, an archive all over the place. So, for example, in the law papers of Alexander Hamilton, he was involved in a boundary dispute at the end of the 18th century for the Livingston patent on the Hudson River in Claremont today, in Columbia County. So just across the river from here. And that land was, you know, had been... sold a couple times over by local Native people a century before, which they disputed that. That's a long story over... They saw it as a fraudulent land purchase. And that's why one of the reasons for the dispute. But anyway, the court called in all the oldest people, and this happened, like, a decade after almost all... Well, pretty much all local Native people were forced out of the area. But all the old local settlers had grown up with Native people, and so they remembered words for, like, you know, and so when they're bringing up landmarks for these boundaries, they bring up words for plants sometimes, place names and stuff that have never been recorded elsewhere. So one plant grows in the Hudson River, the Golden Club, and it's very rare, it's declining, and as far as I know, the name for it was forgotten as Native people from the region were forced away from the river. They didn't have to use that word anymore because it doesn't grow in the contemporary communities where they live west of here. So, like, who would think to go in the law papers of Alexander Hamilton? But if you search hard enough, you'll find that kind of thing. And then those words can be brought back for the new generations.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. It's happening. Thank you guys so much. And so archives with Diane Snake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Diane, we have a language department in our community, and we used to call it Andaliksing, where we speak the language, but we also have it called Dwalitahkwak, which means beautiful sounds. And so Diane is still there today. Right now, she's working with a smaller group of students. They're still there every day, all day, sitting with Diane, learning, documenting, making resources. And I'm so thankful for that they're able to do that and sit there with her every day. I'm very jealous. I'm so jealous. I miss
you
it
got
there.
Your week.
I miss it there, but you know, I still have a good relationship with Diane. Mm-hmm. Like, I always call her my second mom, and you know, like, I go to her for advice, like, even, like, outside of, like, just language stuff.
Yeah.
Like, she's just become part of my life and the language. And
she's an elder.
Yes. Diane, I believe, is 82. And I was telling Justin, like, I still got 40 years left.
That's
if
right.
She can be there at 82, so will I be. Yeah, it's very beautiful. It's just like this. It's in the bush, away from, like, the highway. I mean, you could probably hear the highway, but it is, like, just the most gorgeous place. And, yeah, we do have a trail also that goes along the Thames River. It's called Wali Thakwang, which means, like, a good path. It's similar to, like, where we have little stopping points. They're not QR code connected yet. But there's a picture, the Delaware word, and if there's like something significant to it there.
I remember the one really vividly of the hognose snake. Like, I've never seen one of them. Those basically don't exist around here anymore, but you guys still have them out by you, and that always stuck with me. I ever tell you a story when I first met Diane and I thought she was messing with me? So she told me the word for spider, but she didn't say what it meant. She asked me if I knew, and correct my pronunciation, like, mechalapotis. And I heard the potis ending.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that had something to do with a butt or behind. Uh-huh. And I heard the mech in the front, that something to do with, like, big, I thought. And I was like, what is she trying to get me to say? I wasn't thinking it was, like, spider. And I was so scared. I froze. I didn't know what to say back. She asked me if I knew what that meant.
And was probably wondering why you're being all weird about it.
Well, Lenape people, like, one thing I've learned over the years, like, you guys really love joking and messing with people.
Yes.
And so sometimes it's hard for me to tell when someone is messing with me or not.
Understandable. Yes, we are very, very humored.
Oh, but yeah.
Everybody is in their own pose, but yeah, we like to joke a lot and just, like, even about serious things.
Mm-hmm.
It's their medicine.
Yeah.
Their best medicine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they do, Wali Thakwak has a Facebook page, and they also have YouTube. If you search Kayleen Noah, I think the videos from there go onto her page.
Oh,
and
cool.
So there's some informational videos about how to say different words and things. I have a few on mine, but there's a lot of information there. But yeah, we're really trying to get more digital.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know they use a lot of the QR codes and so that you're able to hear the word, and
right,
putting out QR codes when they give resources out to the community so that you're able to hear as you're looking.
Right.
Yeah, they're doing what they can, and mm-hmm, it's only going to get better.
Yeah, well, you don't need much more than YouTube these days, right?
Right.
In terms of, like, just getting it out there.
I was using YouTube to make a video for my students last night.
Oh, yeah?
Sitting there recording all the names. Trying to upload it and with two bars.
Oh, you could use a Wi-Fi at our house.
Oh yeah, I suppose. But I wanted the whole nature experience.
Okay.
And
there's another element there, right?
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Your camp is so beautiful.
Oh, initially
I was so afraid. Like, you know, I had my worries as just being a girl. But other, like, it's so peaceful.
Aww.
And I've had the best sleeps in a long time. Like I told Justin, I sleep maybe 5 hours a night.
Yeah.
Tops, if I'm good. And I've been getting 10-hour sleeps here.
Wow.
Like, sleeping before midnight and waking up at, like, almost 9 o'clock. I never sleep like this.
Incredible.
But hearing the birds and mm-hmm, all that is awesome. They're really
the
loud.
The deer.
And the deer, yeah. I was sitting at the picnic table on my laptop, and it's completely dark around me, except for, you know, the little lights. I got up, and then I hear a deer sound. I didn't know it was a deer. I thought it was a mountain lion or a cougar. For sure. And then I was like, I just stopped, and I start speaking really loud and slam my laptop shut and tried to be as loud as I could going over to the vehicle. And then I just sat there and finished my work, and by that time
deer, like, what's
I didn't
up?
Hear it anymore, and then I just ran to the tent. I'm like,
funny.
Well, if a bear is gonna get me, it's definitely gonna come through the tent for sure. I don't know why, like, I don't know, I scare myself.
Yeah.
Did Teresa tell you about because you saw her before, since last week. Mm-hmm. Did she tell you about the boat experience last week?
I spoke with her. We were supposed to get together and chat, but we just, it didn't happen. And we said we'll wait till we get back and talk about our trips. And
that was scary. You have to ask her about it.
It didn't look scary, the picture she posted.
Oh, the Hudson River. We got out. So Hudson River Maritime Museum took a group of Delaware Lenape people out on the Hudson River. Mm-hmm. And it was very windy, and when we got out onto the river, the waves got so big that the boat was almost turning sideways. Oh. And
yeah, you said you were taking me to the river, but not on the boat, right?
No, that was not normal. I've been on that boat Solaris. Like 25 times. Yep. Solaris is the most stable, quiet boat. And so the people were saying, like, oh, the river is like been like is angry, saying, where have you guys been, you know, for so long?
Maybe, yes. It got all excited.
Yeah, I mean, it was like the boat was turning so sideways that like the way it looked like the waves were gonna crest over the side. It was,
wow.
So we had to turn around.
That would have been scary. We would always joke about, like, our language group about how we can never travel together. That if we ever are traveling to the same place, that we should not all be in the same vehicle or not all on the same flight in case anything happens.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that's terrible.
That's really meta thinking.
Right? You guys are like, the ones
we're like,
keeping
oh
it going.
Oh, my God. What if, like, because when we went up to school, the ladies like Diane and Angela, Kayleen, Barb, they lived together like during that time. I brought my kids, so I was across the street in my place, but like, so when we would go anywhere, they would be all in one vehicle, and I'd be like, you guys gotta travel separate. What if something happened? Just a joke, but yeah, it's mm-hmm. getting hopefully where we'll have more learners, more speakers, and it won't be as scary.
Yeah.
Because, like, I had a car accident in March, and it, like, I hit a truck head-on in the snow. And I, like, when you think about, like, you know it's going to happen, and those few seconds feel like a few minutes. And I just language in my kids, and I was like, is that all I did? That was my thought. Like, is that all I did? Like, what, you know, like, so that kind of helped in my idea of I still have so much time left, you know. Sure. And really gave me like a more intense look at the language. And what if that had happened? What, like, wow. It's just kind of like when you open your eyes and you feel like, is everything still working? Am I hurt?
Wow.
I was in the middle of a field. I went to this field, he went to that field. He had like a Sierra, I think. And I just had my little compass, and we just started to, as soon as it started to swerve and I seen his headlights, I was like, oh no, we're gonna hit. But it's okay. Now I got that little pretty thing over there.
Yeah, that is a sweet.
From my A to B.
The language mobile.
Language mobile.
Styling, I noticed. You got it all decked out. How long does it take you to get down here?
It was 7.5 hours.
It's a long
too bad.
Day. Yeah.
That's not so bad.
No, it's like, not.
Yeah.
I thought that was fairly, that was a good drive.
Yeah.
We don't think anything of driving, like our people, I feel like. Like, we will go 2 hours down the road, hour down the road to see or visit or go. Like, I don't hardly ever fly. If I had to fly, I think I flew to California once.
Mm-hmm.
Or BC, but everywhere else we've always drove.
Yeah.
Like, if it's on this side of the country.
Just kept it on there. Yeah.
Yeah. I brought some belts I'm working on.
Oh, beautiful.
So I'm looking forward to being just to, like, sit at the picnic table and, you know, work on that land one that I've started.
When did you start making belts?
So being a teacher, like, we always discuss Treaty Week in November, and a big part of Treaty Week is the wampum belts, the different wampum belts. So our students, like, not just our Delaware students, but all of our students in the school learn about the different treaties of people in the groups in the area, and what they meant, and how it relates to the people in our area. And so I start looking at, well, we must have our own belts. Like, because they always talk about the two-row wampum, which is an important wampum belt. But I wanted to see more about, like, were there any specific to Delaware? And there was. We found a few, and I've been learning more and more than what I thought I knew.
There's one only 40 minutes from here. That's from, it's from 1664, I think.
And it's on display?
It's in the, no, it's not on display. It's very, a lot of beads are missing, but you have an idea of what it looked like. And it's from the end of the Esopus Wars. So when local Delaware people, like when the wars ended, they had a really not very good treaty where basically there are all these stipulations to prevent another conflict from happening. Part of the stipulations by the like colonial government were, and like all this land is now ours because like you guys lost the war.
Mm-hmm.
But the belt from that is still, I think it's a county clerk's office in Kingston. It's a belt, it's white and it has three diagonal purple like stripes or lines. And I don't know.
It's white with the purple.
Yep.
This going this way.
Yep.
Was there anything else over here?
I don't think so.
Just that. I wonder if that's how those belts looked from the list that.
Yeah. Oh, like, some of them did.
Where
they're
probably just that symbol at the end and yep. white.
And this is, I mean, the treaty, like, it's all written down, and it was just a peace treaty. So I don't know what, you know.
What did you say the office was called?
The county clerk's office in Kingston.
The plants in this meadow or clearing, Puckdayak, represent the great diversity of species that rely on full sunlight for their survival. Local Lenape people once improved their hunting grounds and cleared their fields with prescribed burns. In doing so, they created a mosaic of habitats and enriched biodiversity.
Where each Muncie dialect is spoken, the landscape's different, which is so cool. I don't know if it's also true for Haudenosaunee people, but it definitely is the case for the Delaware dialects. They're like, each one is in its own unique environmental area.
And there is a lot of variation in topography in this mm-hmm. region. A lot of places, like, say, California, every valley had its own dialect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so incredible, the diversity of language.
Right. You can correlate linguistic hotspot diversity hotspots with biodiversity hotspots sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm wondered whether, like, human cultural diversity is a sign of health, like, the way biodiversity is a sign of, like, ecosystem health.
I think it's a direct correlation, right? I mean, we are the land, and it's mm-hmm. all, there's no separation. If, you know, then that's just
mm-hmm.
diversity is strength. So that's an incredible thing to consider.
Welcome to Pumisito Kwa Kalistok, an indigenous sound walk at Wave Farm. Pumisitok means let's walk, and Kalistok means let's listen. And it comes from the Muncie Delaware language that is still spoken in our communities today. Quinganawaloma, Kolalinda Minnan Alpayak, and Ashishwanakwion, Kristen Jacobs, Ashin Zion, Shukenda Chilinixion, Nina Minitoi, Ashin Zion, Loanachin Ochkwe, Nonjiai Elnapawi Lakawit. When I speak English, my name is Kristen Jacobs, and when I speak Delaware, my spirit name is Northwind Woman. I'm from the Wolf Clan, and I live in Elnapawi Lakawit, which is Delaware Nation in Ontario, Canada.
Look at what the light did now. Burning. till it's wasted. Look at what the light did now. Taste the taste, I taste it, it's tasted. Look at what the light did now. Body like a ghost that barely began. Look at what the light did now. Body like a ghost that barely began.
Yeah. Hare 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 Hare